In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
This afternoon between 3 and 7 on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Communicating with customers in plain language is a tough one for some agencies. You'll get some help with getting rid of the gobbledygook. Getting the Defense Department's books in order will take at least 6 more years. An experienced DOD auditor tells you what should happen next. That and lots more on In Depth with Francis Rose this afternoon between 3 and 7 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Howard Schmidt is the White House cyber coordinator.
It's not a matter that I have to go in and deal with people and try to sell how important cybersecurity is. The secretaries, deputy secretaries, the executive management across the departments and agencies, across the executive office of the president. One of the things that I'm really heartened by is the fact that there is tremendous attention and everybody gets it. And the issue is how do we make this better?
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Did you know federalnewsradio.com offers specialized news feeds just for your agency? Find the agency news page at federalnewsradio.com, search term agency news.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
My guest for this segment of the show is Marcia Mattson. Marcia is a partner at Mayer Brown LLP. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the proposed organizational conflict of interest rule that was issued this week. For revising the Federal Acquisition Regulation, it's been long anticipated. Earlier last year, DOD had issued its proposed rewrite of organizational conflict of interest rules, and subsequently issued a final rule, which we can talk about a little bit. But this FAR rule will have a big impact for service contractors and for the government and how they analyze these issues, which, with the growth of services and government contracting and, the advisory sort of role that many contractors play in government, it's going to have a significant cross-cutting effect. Marcia, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Roger. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here. And I'm glad that you made it back from the royal wedding so we could record this today.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. Maybe not. But, Marcia, I understand you are participating in an ABA task force that looks at these organizational conflict of interest rules. So I think you're the perfect person to have on the show to talk about this, and let's just dive right into it. And you were the chair of the SARA panel, and the SARA panel did sort of tackle this issue or raise this issue in terms of, organizational conflict of interest and the role of contractors. Strangely enough, this rule actually talks a lot about or makes references to the SARA panel a great deal. How do you think the SARA panel report played in what this final rule sort of looks like?
I've got a couple of observations there, I guess. One is timing. It's really interesting. The SARA panel report was final in 2007, and right after the report was issued, actually, there was a FAR case opened on organizational conflict of interest. And it's taken until, now actually to get a proposed FAR rule out, which is an interesting development in and of itself and interrupted by Congress's attention to this issue, both in the in the 2009 Defense Authorization Act, and then also with the WASARA provision. I think the panel anticipated that this area was going to get some attention and believed that the FAR did need to be addressed. And some of the things that the panel focused on and probably started some dialogue in this area was the worthy increase in services contracting, which is something we focused on a lot in our report. And also, the thing that had gotten our attention besides the increase in services contracting was that the guidance about OCIs was coming from bid protest case law. It wasn't coming from the FAR and from the regulatory bodies. And the regulation, this is noted in the preamble to the proposed rule, you know, is very old. It goes back to the 60s, and it really hadn't had any attention. So the guidance on the whole concept of OCI was coming out of decided bid protest cases.
Yeah, really, it was sort of GAO in the bid protest cases, even beyond the FAR. Just I remember, you know, both working in government and outside government, you know, the FAR 9.4, where the OCI rule was sort of an analog framework, but really to get to the nuts and bolts and figure out, you know, how to address an issue, you had to look at the case law, it seems to me. I mean, that's what I recall. What do you think are some of the most significant aspects of this rule?
Well, I was going to add one further thing to my other answer, which I'm going to talk about as a significant aspect. One of the things the SARA panel was concerned about and talked about also was, you know, what happens to non-public information and how can it be better protected and how does that really affect OCIs? And, you know, to answer your current question, you know, probably one of the most revolutionary things about the proposed rule is a major change in the definition of OCI to actually take out of the OCI coverage the whole issue of unequal access to information and competitive advantage and set up a new regime in FAR Part 4 for dealing with a contractor's access to information and determining when that may or may not give someone an unfair competitive advantage and how to deal with it and protect both the government's information that's not public and information that's provided by other contractors who are providing services and supporting the government. So it's really a revolutionary change. I think some other things...
For a second, Marcia. And with regard to that Part 4, FAR Part 4 sort of new provision with regard to unequal access, let's just focus on that for a minute. And what do you think... I think there's some sort of interesting aspects of that you could talk about.
Right. There are a number of interesting aspects. I mean, it takes it out of the FAR.
I'm sort of being understated.
No, I understand. I understand. I agree. I got the point. You know, it has a number of changes. It recognizes, actually, I think really for the first time clearly in regulation, that contractors actually can provide information to the government that's proprietary and confidential, that's non-public, and that needs to be protected. And there really hasn't been a regime that's been clear for protecting it. There's been a lot of discussion about, in the past, about, you know, what's releasable under FOIA and the Trade Secrets Act, but not really a regulatory regime or an approach for protecting contractor information. And this rule recognizes that that's necessary. It establishes it. And some of the more interesting things about it, it recognizes that not all access to non-public information actually is necessarily unequal or unfair. It requires the CO and the agency to do an analysis. It recognizes that there actually can be legitimate advantages of incumbency and that they're not necessarily unfair. It's probably one of the first times outside of case law we've seen that concept articulated. Yep. As I said, it gives analytical techniques. It sets up this mandatory access to non-public information clause that has to go in contracts. And that clause has a number of interesting aspects. It requires the contractor who's getting the information, who's supporting the government, to attest that it will only use the information for government purposes and it will limit access basically on a need-to-know basis. It requires that all persons, employees, consultants to that contractor that are going to use the non-public information actually sign a non-disclosure agreement. It sets out terms for a non-disclosure agreement.
Some of those things are things that contractors, I remember in mitigation cases, will say, well, we'll have our folks do that. Right. Now they're sort of putting it in there saying, right, up front, you got to do it.
Right. A lot of these are things that agencies do and that contractors do and that are good practices, but no one's ever actually sat down and, you know, lined them up and said, okay, here's how we're going to manage this process. It requires actually the contractor who's getting the information in his or her role to support the government to indemnify the government for misuse or unauthorized modifications or release of non-public information. That could be a whole series of interesting questions. It expressly makes the third-party owner of non-public information to which the government's contractor has been given access a third-party beneficiary with respect to terms of the clause, and gives them a right of direct action against the contractor for damages resulting from violations.
Yeah, I guess so. In that case, right, you have someone who submits information theoretically as part of a proposal that it goes to a contractor that's supporting the government in the evaluation of the proposals, that offeror who has submitted, the submitter of the information, you know, has that right to essentially go after that contractor if they misuse the information. They have that direct right. Is that
what I'm saying? They're a third-party beneficiary to the obligations under the clause.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of comments on that aspect of the proposed rule.
Yeah, that's very unique. I mean, you know, typically, and I know you know this, that the Justice Department, you know, government resists making contractors third-party beneficiaries to government terms. So here it is explicit in a
contract
rulemaking,
clause, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Some other things it does, it requires, the contractor who's receiving the information to actually report on itself to report violations. And, of course, it flows down to subcontractors. So it's a whole new, very revolutionary approach.
That is really interesting. Right there, that's a good place to stop for this segment. So right now we have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Marcia Madsen, partner at Mayer Brown LLP, and we're talking about the new proposed, just out, hot off the presses, organizational conflict of interest FAR rule. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Almost 70 years ago, a well-known Connecticut native named Homer Cummings had a dream to start a Washington law firm devoted to working at the intersection of America's business and government. As Attorney General for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was an integral part of the New Deal. In 1956, Gilbert A. Cuneo joined Cummings' firm to begin what was quickly to become the largest and most successful government contract practice in the country, earning him the title the Godfather of Government Contracts. That same firm, McKenna, Long & Aldridge, today is recognized by Chambers USA as a Tier 1 government contract law firm, continuing its preeminence in the field through its offices in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, and San Diego. With the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the United States, McKenna, Long & Aldridge still operates at the intersection of business and government. They produce solutions by working with their clients on creative and flexible strategies that ensure success. Their attorneys and professionals include former members of government, Congress, and its committees, so they know how Congress thinks and they understand how Washington works. There is no aspect of government contracts with which they are not familiar. In this uncertain economic climate, clients trust them to deliver solutions at costs that represent real value. From one new deal to another, they have remained at the forefront of government contracting. McKenna, Long & Aldridge, a name you can trust.
Here's Mike Mestrovich, Senior Technology Officer for the Solutions Directorate for Information Management and CIO of the DIA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization and Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by Unisys.
We actually see virtualization and data center consolidation as an enhancement to security. Simply from the physical component, if I only have to worry about a smaller number of data centers, well, then my security footprint is reduced to those smaller number of centers. And actually, with the same security dollars, I can focus more intentionally on the security that I want to provide to those facilities.
Are you making the right moves? Consolidating government data centers and moving to the cloud aren't easy, especially against a backdrop of continued budget cuts. Unisys enables CIOs to manage all of the IT delivery models across their enterprise within a single integrated management framework, helping clients to plan, design, and implement mission-critical cloud solutions cost-effectively. See how Unisys can help you evolve to the new government enterprise at unisys.com/hybrid enterprise. That's unisys.com/hybrid enterprise.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Osama bin Laden was living in an affluent compound about 35 miles from Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan. That is going to be a problem for U.S.-Pakistani intelligence. Senate Homeland Security Committee Chairman Joe Lieberman said at a news conference yesterday, Pakistan is going to have to prove to the U.S. that it did not know bin Laden was hiding at that compound. He said this is going to be a time of pressure on Pakistan. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a saying that lightning never strikes the same place twice. Airport operators know that's not the case, which is why they rely on Airink to provide the most advanced lightning warning systems available. It allows personnel to get to safety, then back out on the tarmac in the shortest amount of time to keep you moving. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Authors, exploring national security, power, and intelligence in the 21st century. What is smart power? How do 21st century challenges demand a reshaping and redefining of global leadership? And how best can national security leaders transform the intelligence enterprise to meet today's needs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Professor Joseph Nye, author of The Future of Power, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Let's see. You're expected to figure out how to power the federal government with cleaner, renewable fuels, consume far less energy, cut greenhouse emissions across the board, and do it all yesterday. Yes, when it comes to sustainability, government has more to-dos than time. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help agencies be more green and clean and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Did you know that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care at some point in their lives? Long-term care services are expensive. You may need to rely on loved ones or pay for long-term care services out of your income or assets. Fortunately, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was designed to help protect against the high costs of care. Open season ends on June 24th. Visit ltcfeds.com to learn more today.
It wasn't so long ago that collaboration was a bad word in government. Today, we know that the only way to solve our biggest challenges is for industry and government to work together to collaborate. At its upcoming Management of Change conference at the Homestead in Hot Springs, Virginia, ACT-IAC provides an ethical and trusted forum to explore solutions to our most pressing IT challenges. Be a collaborator. Register for Management of Change today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
I love my husband. But I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
Buckling down about buckling up. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. You could say they've been making cars safer. What it really means is that cars have more safety features, but it's still up to us to use them. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, epidemiologist Lori Beck has an example.
The most effective step that anyone can take to protect themselves in a motor vehicle is to wear a seatbelt every time they ride in a car.
Easier said, maybe. But those who don't buckle up raise their odds of being in the statistics that Beck studies. About 34,000 people die each year from motor vehicle crashes, and in 2009, 2.3 million adult drivers and passengers were treated in emergency departments because of injuries from crashes. The data are in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Marcia Madsen, partner at Mayer Brown LLP, and we are talking about the new proposed organizational conflict of interest rule rewrite of the FAR's, you know, decades old, frankly, 9.45 regulation, which has been moved, is proposed to be moved to part three of the FAR, which I'll ask you about at some point. But when we left, we were sort of talking about some of the significant aspects of the rule. And Marcia, take it away.
Okay, Roger. We just finished talking about one of the interesting aspects of the change in unequal access to information. But there are a lot of other interesting things, just sort of at a high level. With that taken out, that changes the definition, but the definition is revised anyway. In the old, the former regime or the current regime, as sort of defined by the GAO case, the Aetna case, which was a decision actually written by our current OFPP administrator, Mr. Gordon. It set out, sort of an analysis of three different kinds of OCIs: unequal access to information, impaired objectivity, and biased ground rules. And this rule departs from that. It doesn't really use the impaired objectivity and biased ground rules language. It talks about those things in concepts,
but it
doesn't really talk about them in that categories that way. And
sort of really doesn't sort of, I mean, one of the things when it first came off and I pulled it out, I went to the definitions. Is it going to define those things? And I think it's actually wise not to try to, pigeonhole and define them, because it really does depend on the facts and circumstances, right?
Right. It's more flexible, I think, in the definition, and the proposed rule gives contracting officers, and we'll talk more about this in a minute, more guidance and actually step-by-step, in some places, approaches for addressing OCIs, and talks to them about how to go about it. And I think that's very helpful. So it gets rid of what people were perceiving, and I think was causing actually a lot of, even possibly a lot of protest litigation, that things sort of had to be pigeonholed in those little categories. And it does, for the first time, and this was a Sarah panel suggestion, provide solicitation clauses that can be tailored by the CO. I think the value of those clauses is, again, it's helping people think through.
I think that's one of the things I really like about it, is that it is, it's giving a framework that people, when they're doing their acquisition planning and they've got to address that clause, they've got to think about this issue.
Right. It gives them a place to start.
Yep.
And one of the comments that's made in the preamble, and this is an observation that the Sarah panel made, was that the government agencies, contracting officers, were having a really hard time with sort of fact-based analysis under the current FAR regime, which was leading, again, to protest litigation, and now we know it's in some cases led to cases under the False Claims Act as well. And the preamble here acknowledges that it's hard to do that kind of factual analysis, and tries to provide much more of a framework and an approach for the government. So those are all very positive aspects. They also apply to, and the proposed rule specifically addresses task and delivery order contracts and how those should be handled, including the schedules. And we'll talk about that in a minute, I'm sure.
Sure. Just step back big picture-wise, though, is that as you, I think, are sort of painfully aware, or maybe all of us were, or maybe, who knows. But and I mentioned in the earlier segment introducing our discussion that DOD had first proposed a rewrite of the organizational conflict of interest rules from its perspective. And it actually, and it was sort of pursuant or initiated by WSARA, the Weapon System Acquisition Reform Act, and addressing OCIs there. But they went beyond sort of the scope of that statute and initially proposed a rewrite from their perspective of all the OCI rules. And subsequently, there was, I think, a fair to say, a concern about that approach. Ultimately, DOD scaled it back to just focus on the statutory implementation as opposed to an entire rewrite. But just philosophically, or what you see when you, I know you've looked at both of them now in depth, what are some of the differences in approach that DOD first proposed versus what we're seeing here?
Well, I think it's actually almost completely opposite. This approach, and I think the FAR councils and probably OFPP get a lot of credit here for creativity and flexibility in designing their proposed rule. This rule is a lot more flexible than the proposed DOD rule was. It's not proscriptive. The DOD rule tried, I think, to focus on sort of interpreting and attempting to apply, you know, every decided GAO case.
Yes.
Working that into the proposed regulation. And this rule takes a completely different approach. It notes that the OCI coverage is regulatory. It's not statutory based now, except with exception of OSARA. And that because it's mostly regulatory based, you can do new things. And you're not tied to either the old approach or cases deciding the old approach. And it does attempt to clarify and simplify, I think. It's much less burdensome. You know, one of the things I think industry and government had focused on about the proposed DOD rule was it had that huge look-back requirement. You had to go back 5 years and provide data, and people had visions of, offerors rolling up, 18-wheelers and dumping off, OCI analysis documents.
And also just even, as you mentioned, there's False Claims Act cases now involving OCIs and
disclosures.
Yeah. And here that created a whole new framework for that kind of stuff as well.
Something else I think this new rule does, and there's a very long list here and we won't get a chance to talk about all of them, but it does recognize that the government has business interests and should be able to make decisions about OCIs in the context of both their potential impact on the integrity of the acquisition system and with respect to the government's business interests, and that those are not always the same thing, and that the government is in a position to make decisions and accept risk, again, presuming that it does enough analysis of an OCI and how to address an OCI. And that it has just a hugely different approach to methods for addressing OCIs in the new section, proposed section 3.1204, by describing the various methods of avoidance, mitigation, limitations on future contracting, acceptance of risk, and so forth. And it doesn't express a negative preference for any of these approaches. And I think both the proposed DOD rule and actually the final DOD rule seem to favor avoidance.
Yeah. Right. Right, as opposed to mitigation or addressing, certain sense using the flexibilities because it is regulatory rather than sort of statutorily based to craft solutions that, and from my perspective, the thing I've always sort of focused on or sort of thought about with regard to OCIs is that balance between, mitigation as a method to enhance full and fair competition, and avoidance seems to me a method to that ends up unnecessarily potentially restricting competition. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think that's probably, in my view, a sort of fair reading of what happened in the proposed DOD rule. The proposed FAR rule actually talks about avoidance in a little different context, and it talks about, doing an early analysis and coming up with techniques really avoid putting contractors in a position, whether it's, being more careful about the type of work they're assigned or other approaches, as opposed to just a strict limitation on future contracting. So it says look at it in advance, and it makes a distinction to a degree between avoidance, which is something this proposed rule says, look, you think about that on the front end, and mitigation is what you do when you're confronted with something and you have to resolve it.
Right. That's, it's really so sort of procurement 101, right? Going back to the basics. You got to do your planning, advanced planning, and take a look at where you're going and figure out how to craft a whole solution. That means the entire solicitation and what's there that will meet the agency's needs and address these issues up front.
Up front. And what does the agency need? What does it require? What does it need the contractor to do? And, not, for example, have overly broad scopes of work.
Well, Marcia, well, right now we're required to take a break. Good. So we will be taking the break, and when we return, we'll be talking some more to Marcia Madsen, partner at Mayer Brown LLP, and we've been talking about organizational conflicts of interest. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the other benefits of the proposed bill, and maybe perhaps some things that Marcia thinks could have been done else, maybe a little better. I don't know. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the coalition today.
Nurse means noble. Nurse means selfless. Mothers nurse their children. You nurse someone back to health. If there were ever a group of people more on the give side of the give-take continuum, it would be news to us. I mean, why does one become a nurse? Because working 8 at night to 10 in the morning is so appealing? Because the glamour of day-to-day encounters with a wide variety of bodily fluids is too much to resist? Nurses are nurses because their capacity to care is colossal. Their sympathy, superhuman. Even when you try to act all steely and businesslike, you can't fool us. We still see the love in the tough. We can still hear that gargantuan heart all squishy with compassion thumping away. So while too often you yield the spotlight for just this moment, we're asking all the nurses out there to do what clearly doesn't come natural and take a bow. Kaiser Permanente. May our 45,000 nurses all live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Federal IT professionals need to make tough decisions. What goes to the cloud, what doesn't? If you are a federal program manager and would like to learn more about decision-making, come to a free breakfast forum brought to you by Armature. Our speaker will be Dr. Ernest Foreman, professor of decision science at George Washington University. At AFEI headquarters near the Courthouse Metro, and you'll be out by 9 a.m. Moderated by me, John Gilroy. For more details, go to AFEI.org.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives. Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen's strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Too many leaks. Quest Security Solutions will help you pinpoint the cracks in your defenses and keep your critical data from seeping out. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's QWEST.com/federal.
Attention integrators, VARs, program managers, sales and marketing professionals, CEOs who need to understand how to get your products in front of the right government decision makers. This is Amtower. For the last 25 years, I've focused on only one market, doing business with our favorite rich uncle. I've learned a lot in that time, and I share that information the way I get it, unedited from the front lines with that patented Amtower edge. If you want the straight scoop, the unvarnished truth, tune in Monday at noon for Amtower Off-Center.
For over 40 years, Mantech employees have been solving complex problems for the national security community. Whether they're providing secure satellite communications to the Department of Defense or investigating threats in cyberspace for intelligence agencies, their work is distinguished by high ethical standards and a deep commitment to their customers' success. They've created a culture that encourages individuals to bring innovative ideas and technology to those charged with protecting the homeland. Due to the high demand for Mantech skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. In 2010, Mantech was selected for Fortune Magazine's 100 Fastest Growing Companies list, named a top 10 best employer for veterans by Military Times Edge Magazine, and for the fourth year in a row was selected as a top 10 military-friendly employer by GI Jobs Magazine. Apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers. That's mantech.com/careers. Mantech is an equal opportunity employer.
For America's wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
I'm Dr. Linda Van Eldick, a biomedical scientist supported by the American Health Assistance Foundation. I conduct research aimed at discovering new and effective treatments for Alzheimer's disease. This is critical because more than 1,000 Americans develop Alzheimer's every day. At our website, you can learn how to live with or care for someone with the disease. Call 1-800-437-2423 or go to ahaf.org for a free brochure on understanding Alzheimer's disease.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Marcia Matz and partner at Mayer Brown LLP, and we've been talking about the new proposed FAR rule addressing organizational conflicts of interest. And, you know, Marcia, one of the things that I really like about this rule is the area where it talks about mitigation and the steps just across the board, the various steps that the government could take to address what a potential or an actual conflict of interest. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think one of the real positive points about the proposed rule is it helps explain what avoidance is, what mitigation is, that it, it actually has a definition for addressing what it means to address a conflict of interest, and that it recognizes it could actually require a combination of government and contractor actions. And one of the really helpful things is it talks about ways to mitigate OCIs. And there's been a lot of discussion, I can tell you, among contractors and government agencies, a lot of disagreement, actually, about whether some of these techniques that are now listed as potential solutions in the rule actually work and whether they should be used. And some of them include using a non-conflicted subcontractor if there's a current OCI. Or in an OCI plan, if there's at least a possibility of future ones. Relying on structural barriers and contractor internal controls. That's really something contractors have thought was important. But again, hearkening back to the original proposed DOD rule, that really appeared to eschew those kinds of approaches. And this rule embraces relying on contractor internal controls. It includes even the possibility of in some situations having a contractor have independent directors, maybe over a particular part of their business. Some people call this the FOCI, foreign ownership control and influence approach, because it's thinking's clearly influenced by those regulations. And DOD really didn't even address this, although there was a lot of interest expressed in it at the hearing on the original Rosara rule. So all of these are very helpful tools to both contractors and contracting officers and agencies in analyzing approaches to deal with OCIs.
Now, with regard to task and delivery order contracts and task orders, I think also one of the benefits of this rule or the positive aspects is that it makes it at least clear that you've got to go through that sort of analysis for task orders. What do you think of that?
I think that's it's a real improvement. There's been a lot of confusion, and if you go back and look at GAO's bid protest decisions, you can see it in bid protest decisions that between what is a current OCI that needs to be addressed now, and what might occur in the future but isn't known, and of course the place this problem really crops up is in IDIQ task and delivery order contracts. And there's a case, and Roger, I know you're familiar with this case, the Axiom case, where actually,
yes, Marsha, I am
actually
familiar with that case.
the Court of Federal Claims got confused about this issue because there was a protest on an IDIQ contract, and the court's whole decision was based on the perception that it was possible in the future, despite the incorporation of an OCI plan into the contract, it was possible in the future that an OCI might rise. And the court itself got confused between what do you do about a current OCI or what do you do about the possibility.
Yes.
And the proposed rule really makes it clear whose responsibilities these things are. It talks about in like 1206-5, it talks about direct acquisitions, and it talks about the customer agency that's doing the ordering, including under the federal supply schedules. That ordering agency is responsible for addressing OCIs, and that talks about assisted acquisitions.
Right, that's 3.1205-6.
1205-6, right.
Yeah, okay.
And then for assisted acquisitions, it says, look, If you're an agency and you're coming to GSA or Interior or somebody to help you with an acquisition, you guys have to have an agreement, and it has to be clear. Everybody has to understand whose job this is so that so we don't look at it down the road and everyone's looking at each other and going,
right.
Hey, well, that wasn't,
pointing fingers at everybody, right?
That wasn't my job.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that guy over there. He's responsible for that, yeah.
Right, and then it also requires that this be done at the order stage. So this whole process, you do it at the front end, and if you can... Again, that procurement planning issue you were talking about.
Yes.
If you can get some of your analysis in place early in an IDIQ, fine. But you still need to step through the same steps that are in the rule each time an order is placed.
That's to me, just given my background and a lot of what I did when I was government, I think that's to try to clarify this, because it's a real issue, and you do see that because of the nature of these IDIQ contracts and that fact that the actual performance of the work and the competition for that work takes place at the task order level. That's where you've got to be focusing a lot of that OCI. That's where it'll crop up, frankly. That's where it really crops up. You can put things in place at the contract level, but really that's just sort of perspective and put in place, but down the road the real facts take place, and
right.
Then you have to do that analysis. I'd just be interesting, and just like everything, there might be things that could have been done better, or drafted better, or just you may have suggestions for them. I'm sure you do. So from your perspective, are there any things that could have been done better in the rule or differently?
I think the rule's a terrific job. I think it's very thoughtful. There's obviously a lot of work in it. I think a lot of us would like to have seen it sooner. In fact, we might have avoided some confusion over the past 2 years, at least if we'd seen it sooner. But, it is what it is, and it's a really good job. The only comment I think I have is the preamble talks about on the one hand, that agencies and contracting officers have had trouble doing fact-based analysis. But this rule puts a lot more emphasis on the need for contracting officers and agencies to analyze particular facts and circumstances and to come up with solutions. And to be fair, the rule has step-by-step guidance. It talks about what to do at the pre-solicitation stage, what to do during the evaluation stage, what to do post-award. And so it has a lot more framework for agencies, contract and contracting officers, and I think more framework for contractors as well. I think one of the things that it could do more, it could provide more of, and this is the hard spot really, is giving perhaps examples, fleshing out some of the analytical techniques that contracting officers and agencies could use. Just to give you an example, I mean, right at the front in the new 3.1203B, it says agencies must examine and address OCIs on a case-by-case basis because conflicts arise in various and unique factual settings. And then it directs, it has mandatory language, CO shall consider specific facts and circumstances of the situation and the nature and extent of the risks and determine what methods to apply. That's a lot of work.
Right. And aren't COs under this rule also going to have a better, or the government's going to have a good understanding of corporate structure and, you know, how those affiliates for, you know, business units versus wholly owned subsidiaries and how all that separation works? Isn't it? I mean, it seems to me that's a, definitely an area where there's going to have to be some, you know, it sort of strikes me here that there's a big training opportunity coming out of this, Marcia, that if the, you know, I like this approach, but I think like the things you're mentioning need to be fleshed out. You can see that there's going to have to be, you would think that, and I'm sure, you know, they're thinking about it now over at OMB, OFPP. It's like, how do you roll out training for folks as they move towards this rule, you know, and provide sort of that meat on the bones that at the working level, which I think is a good approach, to provide that forum. Maybe there's training opportunities for lawyers out there. What do you think, Marcia?
Well, I was about to say that I think one of the things this rule is going to require is much closer coordination between lawyers and contracting officers and agency business people to get this done. Because remember we talked about at the very beginning, that one of the things contracting officers can do is decide to accept risk.
Yes.
Now, the rule anticipates that they're going to go through an analysis, that they may put in place some avoidance processes or techniques or some mitigation techniques. But then what if there's residual risk? The rule says if it's just a business issue, you can decide to accept it. Well, if you're going to accept it, you better have done your homework.
Right. And you will, if you're an agency contracting officer, you're going to need to coordinate with your counsel.
Very carefully.
Yes, to go through this.
And absolutely. Some of this analysis is very sophisticated, and you put your hand right on it. You know, the rule talks about allowing agencies and contractors to rely on contractor internal controls. Those are corporate structure issues. It means people have to understand corporate legal concepts and how companies do business to see whether these kinds of techniques make sense.
Well, Marcia, that's all for today. I mean, it's a really interesting rule. I'm glad you had the opportunity to come on and talk about it. So I want to thank Marcia Mattson, partner at Mayor Brown LLP, for joining me today. I'm Roger Waldron, and this is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Almost 70 years ago, a well-known Connecticut native named Homer Cummings had a dream to start a Washington law firm devoted to working at the intersection of America's business and government. As Attorney General for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was an integral part of the New Deal. In 1956, Gilbert A. Cuneo joined Cummings' firm to begin what was quickly to become the largest and most successful government contract practice in the country, earning him the title, the Godfather of Government Contracts. That same firm, McKenna, Long & Aldridge, today is recognized by Chambers USA as a Tier 1 government contract law firm, continuing its preeminence in the field through its offices in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, and San Diego. With the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the United States, McKenna, Long & Aldridge still operates at the intersection of business and government. They produce solutions by working with their clients on creative and flexible strategies that ensure success.
Their attorneys and professionals include former members of government, Congress, and its committees, so they know how Congress thinks and they understand how Washington works. There is no aspect of government contracts with which they are not familiar. In this uncertain economic climate, clients trust them to deliver solutions at costs that represent real value. From one new deal to another, they have remained at the forefront of government contracting. McKenna, Long & Aldridge, a name you can trust.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
The U.S. military is increasingly deploying airborne video surveillance applications to aid in a variety of operations, such as natural disaster assessment, homeland defense and protection, as well as military intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance missions. Only satellite networks can provide unconstrained coverage over land and water, enabling critical information to be shared in real time with command and control locations. Whether your mission is to secure our country's borders, operate UAV networks, or provide situational awareness beyond the line of sight, Hughes has the scalable airborne solution to meet your requirements anywhere in the world. Hughes commercial airborne broadband solutions are ideal for both fixed wing and rotary aircraft, are interoperable, can work seamlessly within your current operational network, and fit into your tightly constrained budget.
To learn more about Hughes technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes at defense.hughes.com.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Doreen Andrews is the Peace Corps' CIO. She says the agency is figuring out the best way to modernize its business processes.
We are going to take two or three ideas from the agency, and we're going to create demo projects, and about half of our headquarters group, 300 to 500 people, are going to be able to really test out and test drive some automation solutions from the administrative side.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Here's Mike Mestrovich, Senior Technology Officer for the Solutions Director for Information Management and CIO of the DIA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization and Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by Red Hat.
We actually see virtualization and data center consolidation as an enhancement to security. Simply from the physical component, if I only have to worry about a smaller number of data centers, well, then my security footprint is reduced to those smaller number of centers. And actually, with the same security dollars, I can focus more intentionally on the security that I want to provide to those facilities.
To listen to the whole program made possible by the Trezza Media Group, log on to FederalNewsRadio.com.
There are a lot of virtualization solutions out there from proprietary companies, but they are expensive and lock you into long-term relationships with vendors that you might not want. But Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization is a highly secure open-source platform for mission-critical workloads. Red Hat technology is based on open standards, so your IT future still belongs to you. And if you're ready to start cloud computing, this is the way to do it. 90% of public clouds already run on open source. This is Paul Smith from Red Hat, and if you want to learn more from the open source leader, check us out at redhat.com/virtualize.
Alan Hecht, Director for Sustainable Development from the Environmental Protection Agency, commented during the panel discussion, Beyond Green, Making Sustainability Sustainable.
There are 435 green labels out there. And the consumer world and consumers are saying, are these green? Is this greenwashing? What is green? And they are supportive of wanting to protect the environment.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, Booz Allen.
Amid challenging budgetary and regulatory circumstances, government agencies are under increased pressure to improve operational efficiency and account for impacts to the environment, our natural resources, and society. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton have over 30 years of experience helping organizations assess, improve, and implement their sustainability initiatives, going beyond compliance to integration with and enhancement of the agency's mission. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's QWEST.com/federal.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Check your thrift savings plan numbers every day at federalnewsradio.com. Find out how your funds closed and how they're doing for the year. It's all right there on our homepage, federalnewsradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Top story, you want proof Osama bin Laden is dead? CNN's Brianna Keeler has the latest on whether the White House is going to release photos.
The White House is leaning towards releasing those photos. That is coming from a government official familiar with intelligence matters, and I should tell you that CNN's John King came by this information. He's also reporting that a senior government official says they could be released today. If they are released, they would come out through the CIA. There are a number of photos. As you can imagine, this source is saying they are very graphic.
The Pentagon is giving us more details about the special forces attack that killed bin Laden. CNN's Barbara Starr says it was a big challenge to get into a compound that was specifically designed for security.
They started